Let's move on and talk about Hodgkin lymphoma. We had a cool question come in from the audience about the issue about you have to wait for the CAR T therapy. And actually, we're starting to see off the shelf, there were some presented at ASCO, agents that can be used that have a similar mechanism. But again, tune into our CAR T show, so to speak, and we're going to get into a lot more depth there. But now we want to move into Hodgkin lymphoma, and particularly the use of brentuximab vedotin, particularly up front as a relatively new strategy, but also checkpoint inhibitors. And so we asked this question here. You know, we've known for a long time that you have standard ABVD, often risk adapted, but something beat that recently, and we all know what that is, which is the answer C, ABD and brentuximab vedotin. So again, Mike, if you can talk a little bit about what BV is, it kind of looks similar to what we were just talking about in terms of polatuzumab being an antibody drug conjugate. And maybe talk a little bit about how it sort of worked its way into being used upfront in the treatment of extensive stage Hodgkin's.
Well, Craig did a nice job explaining the injectable, at a cellular level, the injection of the chemotherapy agent into the cell. It interferes with tubulin and microtubule formation, so cells, they die when they try to divide after this is in place. So it turns out that this was very active as a single agent in relapse refractory Hodgkin lymphoma. So it really was a big advance some years ago when it became available. And as with many of the drugs that we use in oncology that turn out to have value in the relapse refractory setting, they get moved more and more to the front line. And so there were various studies looking at whether you could use it by itself or in some combination as initial therapy. It turned out that in the initial phase one study, where there was an effort to just add brentuximab vedotin to traditional ABVD, that you can't give Brentux with bleomycin. There's too much pulmonary toxicity. So that's why the study that moved forward was a large phase three trial comparing standard ABVD with ABVD minus bleo, but adding in Brentux. And that is the one that showed some improvements in outcome, a little different side effect profile, but improvements in outcome for AAVD, which is the newer regimen. And that's now the control arm in the current ongoing phase three national study. So it's moved from being the experimental arm to the standard arm in the new study. And maybe it's going to be supplanted with what's being studied now. So that's the way we progress in the field.
So it does seem, you know, when you look at the trial that you were just talking about, the Echelon 1 trial, which, as you said, compared this strategy to the more traditional strategy, you did see a slight improvement. It wasn't gigantic, but it was a significant improvement. I think I hear a lot of people talking about this in higher risk situations, particularly younger patients. Also, we've seen BV used up front in T-cell lymphoma. This is the Echelon 2 study, where it was added up front to chemotherapy as well and also showed a benefit. Craig, any comments before we go into other issues related to vedotin about the use of this strategy up front? There's been a lot of debate ever since it first came out. It looked like the results were better in North America with the idea that maybe the docs had more experience with the drug. Any comment about this strategy and what it really means to patients using it up front in this situation, Craig?
Well, the nurses will know that BV-ABD cannot be given without growth factors. Everybody is neutropenic, and then there'll be delays in therapy. So in the U.S., we knew about this, and patients were given prophylactic G-CSF, and we almost never dose-reduced. So the data in North America, although it's a secondary analysis of the study, is 10% better than the data in Europe. That's number one. The second issue in the T-cell lymphoma study, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but I'm pretty sure that this is the only study in untreated lymphoma where there's a survival advantage, overall survival advantage of one arm versus another. It's unheard of in lymphoma.
Right, right.
So that ship has sailed. Everybody's given that for T-cell lymphoma that's CD30 positive.
Let's talk a little bit about the practical implications. And Molly, we've been using BV even prior to this in consolidation. And actually, Craig did the study where they looked at patients who had transplant after having a relapse, and they did better when they got BV consolidation over a year. I'm curious, Molly, on this experience, I'm sure you've given a lot of BV just to extensive stage disease, both in that setting where you're going to give it by itself, as well as in the upfront setting, you're going to present a patient. Just curious what you see in terms of tolerability with BV, particularly as it relates to neuropathy, Molly.
Yeah, neuropathy seems to be the most prominent of the side effects, and peripheral neuropathy can be life-altering, and that's something that we really want to pay attention to in these patients. Oftentimes, it doesn't recede, and that's something they're going to be working with or working against or dealing with for the remainder of their life. And if it gets bad enough, it can alter your livelihood. It can affect the way that you sleep and rest and function. And so it's not a great thing to have. You can have visceral neuropathies as well that can affect the way that your gut works and have other problems with that. And so we try to pay attention up front and dose adjust as we can. There are some studies that look at adding some supplements like B12. We certainly treat the pain with whatever combinations of medications that we can do. We consult pain service, we consult neurology, and try to see if maybe we can thwart off some of the side effects early on. Like I said, dose adjust and pay attention to what the patient's saying.